Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast, the only podcast that's brought to you live and indirect from Providence, Rhode Island, via the capital city of Columbus, Ohio. I'm your host, John Orlando. Happy 2015. That's right. This is the first edition of 2015, episode number 59, and I'm very excited to be here. But before we get into a little bit about what this episode's going to be, I hope that everybody out there had a very happy holiday season. I hope they had a safe one. I hope they enjoyed their time with friends, family, whatnot. I mean, I had a very good one. I traveled up to Rhode Island. As many of you maybe followed me on Instagram or on Twitter and saw that I posted a lot of quick photos from around town, showing a little bit of my travels, bebopping up and down to a couple different cities there in Rhode Island, but it was nice and relaxing. I'll be honest, I worked on a little bit of things for this podcast, but that's about it. I didn't really do too much else, just hung out with mom and stepdad, and just kind of relaxed. So it was very nice, that quick vacation, then came back here for New Year, spent some time with some family and some friends back here. Over New Year's, and now we're back in the swing of things. We're back to the grind. And right now, on the day in which I'm recording this podcast, it is like negative 8 million degrees outside in Columbus. Man, this cold weather is really brutal out there. But what are you going to do? You know, you could complain about it, but Mother Nature really doesn't care. So, but enough about the weather, because I'm sure you're probably sick of hearing people talk about it anyways. Let's talk about this episode of the PVD Cast. I sit down with a gentleman by the name of Ken Epstein. Ken is a individual that had a vision for comic books and went out and did it, man. He created Nix, N-I-X Comics. You can check them out at nixcomics.com. And it's its own little publishing organization, I guess you could say, working with a lot of different creators, a lot of different writers, a lot of different people. And Ken, over the last 5 years, has really tried to make a mark here in Columbus with the underground or independent, or I don't know what adjective you want to call it. And you're actually going to hear that. We're going to have a debate in this conversation about what does that term independent actually mean. But whatever adjective you want to put on it, I should say, you know, he's trying to make his mark in the comic book world. And so with a big event that's coming up here this Saturday, which is the Belligerent Kitties release party, it's here in town, 2250 North High Street at Cafe Kerouac, 7 p.m. That's when Ken's going to debut this new book, which we talk a lot about, Belligerent Kitties. It seems like it's going to be something that's going to get a few chuckles and hopefully catches on and it sets the world afire. But he's done a lot of different things over the last 5 years or so that, well, while Nix Comics have been, you know, started and then been growing. So we're going to talk about that. And, you know, I've had a lot of different comic book creators on, you know, most recently Brian Lau a few weeks ago, and then way, way back Dara Naragi. And while you'll hear some similar things that Ken will mention, you also get a little bit of a different perspective on his philosophy about comic books and about life in general, which I always find very, very intriguing. So I'm going to throw it to a very short break, and then when we come out of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Ken Epstein, the man behind Nix Comics. Hey there, do you need a website? Maybe for your business or for your own personal use? Then you need to check out Bluehost.com. It's the web hosting service I, John Orlando, use for PVDcast.com. They've got great, helpful people. In fact, I've had some problems, and all I've done is chatted or called those folks, and bam! Problem fixed. They've even got some great pricing too, which, I mean, I won't talk about that because all you got to do is go over to Bluehost.com and you can find out all the information that you need. Take it from me. They're the best out there. Go to Bluehost.com to get all the details. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another installment of my podcast, the PVD Cast. John Orlando here. I'm joined with the man that is behind Nix Comics, Mr. Ken Epstein. Ken, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing good. It never fails. I sit down to do one of these, and while this thing's not recording, we're having a great conversation just back and forth. It would be so entertaining, man. It happens every single time.
It does. We could maybe recreate it a little bit, talking about, because you let in with the man who is Nix Comics and the idea of branding yourself.
Well, that's true. It's so kind of, really, yeah.
Which I find, you know, largely ludicrous.
Yeah. All right, we'll come back to that. So let's start. Right. Let's start off with what is Nick's Comics.
Nick's Comics is a publishing imprint that I started 4 years ago. I guess this will be my fifth anniversary year.
Okay.
It was shortly after I had stopped selling records as like my side business. I owned a record store, record/comic store, a couple of times, but mostly like over about a decade, I sold stuff online. And you know, I was good enough at it that if you gave me $100, I could turn it into $150. And so okay. I would do that on a monthly basis and have a little extra pizza at the end of every month. but eventually that particularly when the brick and mortar aspects of that never took off, I was tired of it and I wanted something new. So I took all the old records and sold them on eBay for dirt cheap and used that money to launch Nick's Comics, which are comics that you can sell in a record store, you know, essentially.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that, as I took a few notes, I noticed that, you know, you obviously love music and you have a passion for it and some strong opinions about it, and you've kind of merged those two things in with Nick's Comics. So talk a little bit about like what you decided as like potential appeal, I think is the phrase that you used on the website, if you will, about comics and...
Well, I think there's kind of two notions with that, where there's, you know, comics people and you make comics to sell to comics people, and I think that's what most people do. Mm-hmm. To me, I think that they have a much broader appeal than that. Just you got to figure out a way to stick them under the right people's nose and right. have subject matter that maybe appeals to somebody else. You know, and certainly there's been a long historical tie between rock music and comics, mm-hmm. you know, going all the way back to, say, R. Crumb and the Big Brother and the Holding Company yeah. album cover and the you know, he was more of a jazz guy, but the comics he did for the blues and jazz stuff. You know, that's always been there, and that cross-pollination has kind of evaporated with what comic stores have become, and with what record stores have become.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, to be fair, there's some record stores that, in fact, I don't know, I think anymore, I think you're hard-pressed to find those corporate record stores anymore.
They're all gone, and local record stores have kind of come back to the fore because of it, which is a great thing. You know, and I get in trouble for saying this, but I kind of hope that's what happens with comic stores. Right now, you essentially have most of the comics. I hate to paint with a broad brush, but most comic shops are the same city to city. You don't go to a city and say, hey, what's this local comic shop like? Because they all use the same distributor. They all use Diamond. And so the majority of their merchandise is the same. There are exceptions, you know, Copacetic Comics in Pittsburgh, Desert Island in Brooklyn, Quimby's in Chicago, which is more of a bookstore. But you know, there are more of the kind of curated stores in other cities. There's nothing really like that in Columbus, unfortunately.
All right, so let's talk about comics in general. I assume that you are a comic book enthusiast.
I am.
How'd you get started in it?
How'd I get started in comics ever when I was a kid?
Yeah, when you were a kid, like what drew you to it?
I don't know. I was like a lot of smart mouth fat kids who got beat up a lot. I mean, they were something that, you know, I could get behind. I was like everybody else. I got them off the rack at the 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
You know. Uh-huh. And it started with you know, Superman and you know, the big ones. The first kind of, they're not obscure now, but the first kind of obscure thing was the X-Men. I pulled the issue where Jean Grey died, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, who's going to start there? But I did, because that's what you did in those days. And it was the first comic that I can remember my brothers not kind of, who are about 10 years older than me, kind of grabbing and scurrying off with themselves, because they didn't buy a lot. They bought like Heavy Metal magazines, which I'd, you know, scurry and hide off under my bed because, you know, you're a young little perv, but they would kind of go the other direction and they might pick up any Superman or Flash comics I had. Okay. But right. the X-Men, they didn't recognize. I remember distinctly saying, I don't know who these guys are, and kind of leaving the comic there. So that became like mine, that burn Claremont era comic stuff.
Gotcha. So then would you say that you were an X-Men fan from there on out? Like, what were some of the ones
until
that you collected?
Well, I was an X-Men. You know, I was never a big collector.
Okay.
I read them, and to this day, I read them and I keep them if there's something I think I can learn from them, or you know, they have some personal attachment. But I read a lot and pass them on. You know.
Oh, okay.
I'm not a big collector of those. Which is probably good because I am a collector of records, and I don't think my tiny condo could support both a record and a comic collection.
Yeah.
But it was the X-Men for a long time. In the 80s, I really liked the John Byrne Superman. So I was like a big John Byrne guy in the 80s.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
See, I'm very similar, too. Like, I like to follow writers. You know, no matter if it's not a character I'm too interested in, I'll still give them a shot.
Yeah.
Because, well, you know, so-and-so is writing that comic. I'll give it a shot, even though I don't like whoever. Black Panther, for an example. All right, you know? I mean...
And then, probably the first indie stuff I got into was kind of superhero-y, too. You know, like Matt Wagner stuff.
Oh, okay.
And then the kind of by the time I went to college, I got away from it, was more interested in girls and music and stuff like that. And I, you know, I had aspirations to be an artist myself. I mostly write now, but you know, I can hold a pen, I can hold a pencil, and you know, and ink the odd thing. But I never. It's ironic. I never went far with it because I kind of felt like my skills plateaued, and I was feeling like I could never be John Byrne or George Perez, and I couldn't.
Yeah,
but you know, at the same time, I was getting into punk rock music, and I learned from the wrong idols, you know?
Yeah, right,
you know,
yeah.
I should have just kept going, and it doesn't fucking matter if it's
right,
good
that
enough.
DIY type of attitude of punk rock,
And I missed it entirely. So it wasn't until much later that I came around to, oh, geez, it doesn't matter. I should just do what I want to do, and if I make comics that I appreciate and the people I hang with appreciate, they're going to have their own success, you know,
which is a mantra that I've said a lot on this podcast. Is, you know, it's independent, man, and I like to push those ideas of independent endeavors, whatever they are, because they, you know, they're things that spawn other ideas. I think that, you know, and I like to cultivate that. And I'm getting off on a tangent right there, but all right. So, you know, let's go back a little bit. So you started Nick's Comics in 2011, correct?
2011. Yeah, yeah. I mean, 2010 is when I started doing the work, and then the first book came out
in 2011. Okay, so in those 5 years, I know that one of the other big philosophies that you have is this idea of an open submission policy. So why, number one, why have that? And number two, what was the, and this might spawn off of number one, what was the reason for having that? Like, did you submit things to, in other words, were you...
You know, I never did. I completely started my own comics company because I'm a coward and I couldn't take rejection letters.
Okay. So what's the philosophy then of just having the open submissions policy?
I wanted to give other people the same chance. I wanted to not rely just on my own material. You know, it would be real easy for what I do to be a vanity project as opposed to, you know, an ongoing publishing effort.
Right.
And, you know, and the submission policy has been weird. It's come and it's gone, and it's, I'm always open to ideas, but when I just kind of had it out there on the website, you know, I would get just weird stuff in the email and have to have that awkward...
Well, see, that was going to be my next question.
...email exchange with people,
Did you get some weird stuff that you were like, hey, man, I'm open to any ideas, but this is a little bit way out there? No?
No, nothing like that. Okay. Just stuff that, you know, I have a tone and I have a purpose to my books and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And I have, my, you know, my personal preferences. Maybe I don't want it to be a complete vanity project, but I want it to be reflective of, you know, my general short attention span, but you know, I'd have guys sending me scripts for 300-page sword and sorcery.
I gotcha.
You know,
gotcha.
Graphic novels, and I'm like, well, I'm not gonna commit to this.
This
has nothing to do with what I'm doing, and you know, that kind of thing. And then there are a lot of times, you know, you would get stuff where it was small enough that I would say, well, why do you need me? You know, I. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you could save up enough money to put this out yourself, which would be probably more rewarding and better for you in the end anyway, instead of splitting any sort of credit with me. You know,
gotcha.
So the open submission's kind of come and gone. At this point, I'm mostly, when I need artists for an upcoming issue, I'll put a call for artists out if I don't already have people assigned or some of my regular guys. And I'm always looking for new talent that way.
Okay.
And I guess, to be fair, it wasn't through any sort of formal submission process, but the Do You Remember Rock and Roll Record Stores comic kind of came to me as a submission. That was Bela, who I've known for years through record store stuff, and mm-hmm. through him being a local record store guy, record label guy. And he came and he just asked if I would be interested in making a comic out of some of his kind of popular blog posts. And I said, yeah, of course I would.
Yeah.
And so that kind of, we figured out how to make that happen, at least for one issue.
So I think another thing that when I've spoken to other comic book creators or publishers, one of the things is finding the right fit of people. So, you know, with that being said, you've got a lot of people, you know, I'll just throw out some names, Matt Wyatt, Michael Nino, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Rachel Deering, you've got Pat Broderick, which when I saw that name, I was like, I haven't thought of Pat Broderick in a long time, but I think he did one of your issues, one of your quarterly issues.
Yeah, he was brought on by the writer of the story. Actually, okay. I've had very limited contact with him.
But nonetheless, finding the right vibe, the right mix, if you will, of people, how important is that to you at Nick's Comics?
It's important to me that the artists and the writers engaged are fans of what I do.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
And that they kind of come from my community in some, gotcha. You know, whatever yeah. that, however you want to define
right.
that community.
No, yeah.
And I'm certainly willing to like bend the rules of what's in the community and that. but you know, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be cliquish like that.
Sure.
But you know, sometimes these things just come to you. Michael Nino came to me because he was recommended by a longtime friend of mine who used to be a customer at my first comic store. You know, a good friend besides being a customer, but he got recommended. Matt Wyatt, of all things, I met through the band The Fleshtones. We both went to go see The Fleshtones at the same night.
Oh, really?
Matt had done the poster for their local part of their tour.
Okay.
And Ken Fox from The Fleshtones said, hey, you know this guy? He's a cartoonist. And I didn't. So so I kind of Matt and I were introduced by our idols.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, that's
and
cool.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Rachel, who's moved on to bigger and better things, she's always really nice about saying how... in interviews about how she started with me, but she's off doing all her great Dark Horse stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
She just saw in the paper that, you know, I was publishing stuff and kind of handed me down and wore me down until I would let her submit a story.
Gotcha. So as long as those writers, those creators, those artists are all kind of, they can all gel with the particular philosophy of Nick's.
Right.
They're good to go. What?
Yeah.
That's cool. I think I agree. I understand because, like I said, I've asked that question many times to creators. And I get it. I think you have to have that good working relationship. Otherwise, you can't get anything done. And it's not going to come out right. It's
yeah.
not
well,
be as you want it.
If I can air a pet peeve on,
sure.
on into
go
the
ahead.
Into the ether here. It really bugs me when I'm contacted by artists who have clearly never read one of my books, or, you know.
Yeah,
you do a call for artists, and you know, it's all right if they're referred to it or they see it and they think it looks great, but to come at a publisher with no idea of what they do,
yeah,
it burns me a little. I'm always very polite about it. But,
sure, yeah, no, but no,
you know,
I get what you mean. Yeah.
If you want $300 for doing a story from me, which isn't a lot of money, granted, you know, you can hop on the website and pay $8 to have me ship you a comic, so you know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
most
definitely, yeah.
But I don't know. That's petty, but that's
no,
it's true.
I've heard that before. I've heard. heard that before by many other creators about that. That yeah, you know, it's just like a job interview. You wouldn't go into a bank without knowing anything about what they do or how much money they have or what their yearly profits are. You know, if you were interviewing, that'd be dumb.
Well, and that's another good one. Is I think a lot of these artists, and this isn't so much a pet peeve as much as I kind of roll my eyes at it when it happens. A lot of people don't realize that response to a call for artist or a submission, that's your first interview question. You're already being interviewed.
Yeah.
And if you're not writing in complete sentences and making paragraph breaks and providing what was asked for in that initial call or on the website, you're behind the eight ball, man. You better be, you know, the next
George Perez,
Bernie Wrightson or George Perez, you know, and even then, do I as like an editor and an author want to deal with somebody who couldn't read the most basic starting point of a script, which is that call?
You know,
and even a great artist, are they going to be worth like having to haggle through every page and every detail?
Gotcha. All right, so let's go back to what we talked about before we start recording this thing. So, because you touched on it, you know, I did kind of introduce you as the man behind Nick's Comics. Yeah. We were talking a little bit about I don't even know the best way to describe it, but like the branding of yourself to an extent. So, tell the folks at home your opinions you were thinking about, you know, the fact that
you are
Nick's Comics, and I say that in jest, but right. You know.
How I hate the notion of branding, but you have to roll with it.
Yeah, you do.
You do. It's so easy to get caught up in the jargon of it and the notion of what a brand is supposed to be and always pushing towards being your brand, when in fact that stuff takes care of itself. If you're being productive and you're... I saw Matt Miner tweet this once. I thought it was great when he was giving suggestions to people who want to break into the biz. If you're networking for real, meaning that you're doing real networking, not just...
BSing.
Just shouting at celebrities on Twitter. if you're doing that kind of stuff and you're putting in the effort to be consistent, the branding takes care of itself, you know. Unless you're one of those guys who does a little this and a little that and a little this, which makes it a little harder for people to grasp what you do.
Right, and you know...
Which I may be guilty of, too.
Right. I think, I'm guilty of it somewhat, too. You know, I've said many times with this particular podcast, I'm talking about what I want to talk about because it's mine. And I know that may not always interest everybody, but I think that, you know, by being honest and being myself, then I think that, I agree with you. The brand will take care of itself.
Well, and trying to guess what people want
is
tough. I'm not going to do any more kids' comics, probably.
Yeah.
Although that wasn't guessing what people want as much as a self-defense mechanism where, you know, I do a lot of craft shows and local flea markets and stuff, and we are in holy roller territory here. Even in Columbus, you know, which is mostly liberal, but... There were times where I was at street fairs and, you know, I would see parents scurry their children away from my devil comics, you know. And that's fine. They're allowed. I'm just saying I want that line of defense. So I was like, well, I'm going to make some kids comics. And the thinking was they should sell because I know a lot of people with kids.
I just read a tweet from Japanese horror director Takashi Miike, who stated, I'm going to paraphrase it roughly, but it was like, I don't worry if my movies don't make people happy because I cannot predict what's going to make people happy. Right. I'm going to make my art, and if it makes people happy, great. If not, it's not. And I think that's the best way to look at any type of creative endeavor.
Well, and then how you deal with it when people don't go for it. You know, I think one of the funniest things is looking at the covers. Like, I can tell that there are covers people didn't like on issues.
Because they don't
sell as well.
Okay.
And the cover is pretty much what sells. When you have a consistent and an unknown product, you know. So people didn't like the cover to issue 2. Well, there are a couple of things with issue 2, but people told me they didn't like
the cover. Okay, so this is Nick's 2. Is this Nick's Comics quarterly?
The quarterly number 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And people told, well, nobody told me, but I think Kent Grossweiler's cover to Knicks Comics Quarterly number 6 scares people because it's pretty grotesque. I love it, but but there's something about it that that makes people look away. But you know, it's kind of funny because that one is one of those things where one of the things I do is I bring in artists who aren't necessarily comic artists, and Kent's a good example of that. He's a painter.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him to do a painting, and there were a lot of steps in the learning process for both of us in getting the cover to what I wanted, because he didn't really have a concept of what I was saying, and I wasn't communicating it well. So you know, there are a lot of steps, and he's a very congenial guy. So, mm-hmm. you know, it worked out fine, and I think he felt he learned a lot, and I learned a lot. But where is I going with that, other than praising Kent and how awesome he is?
But, that's good enough.
But yeah, you know. Good. Anyway, there are definitely, you know, there are mistakes with covers in that people don't like them. If you want to call them mistakes, and I think you just deal with it, you know.
Well, let's talk.
Or you bundle them.
Right.
That's something else I've started doing, is selling box sets and bound sets. So.
Yeah, that's a smart move. Yeah. Smart move. Well, let's talk a little bit about, so with Knicks Comics, you have the quarterlies that come out. Mm-hmm. So those come out, obviously, 4 times a year, correct? They are quarterly or so.
They did the first year.
Well, hey, you know. You try getting an episode of a podcast up every single week. Anyways.
Yeah, I never said a quarter or what is my standard defense.
That's a good one.
But yeah, those come out quarterly. Ideally, what I would like to have is the Knicks Comics Quarterly, which I may just change to Knicks Comics Horror. I may just change the title. I'd like to get 4 of those out a year. I'd like to get 1 or 2 Westerns out. I mean, you know, when I'm dreaming.
Sure.
And then, you know, a few other sporadic titles, whether they're graphic novels that I reprint or, you know, minis or whatever they are.
Well, the question that I was going to mention is that you have some recurring, I guess, characters and features in each one of the quarterlies, correct?
Yeah.
So I'm going to throw a couple out, just maybe if you want to briefly describe them and maybe explain what the inspiration was for some of the characters. I think, obviously, the first one is the mysterious The Vicar, if you will.
The Vicar, so, yes.
He's kind of I'll let you explain. You go ahead and explain what he kind of is. And
The Vicar is a monster slayer. He's a vampire slayer.
Okay. All
right. And he fronts a band. He dresses as a priest and fronts a band where they're all dressed as choir boys. And what he does is he goes from seedy bar to seedy bar, slaying all the monsters who are lurking in the audience, because, you know, if you're an old bar hound like I was, you know it's loaded with vampires and ghouls. And
so that was your inspiration, own personal experience. Of,
oh yeah, absolutely. In my own regrets, you know, I don't talk about it a whole lot because I don't think it was a desperate situation, but I kind of spent my 20s till, you know, around 28. Not doing a lot other than going to bars and seeing shows. And,
yeah, I mean,
and I regret that in some ways because I could have been making comics. I could have been doing something else, and you know, who knows where I'd be now? You know, and you can't play that too much. But you know, it's a shame that it took me until I was basically 40 to start indulging the creative yin, getting out there.
Gotcha.
But anyway, The Vicar's part of that, because I do in my darker moments say, you know, if it wasn't for this guy sucking on my time and this and this eating away at my flesh, I could have been doing more. So that's The Vicar.
And I think, you know what, I think, just to give you a side note there, you know, I think that personally myself, you know, I think as long as you recognize that you have the drive to do that, it doesn't matter what age. I really don't believe that. I believe age should not be an excuse that people use. And I think in our society, just getting philosophical here right now, many people at home are going, what? Anyways, I think philosophically, I think people use age as an excuse not to do what they want to do. And I think that's...
That never occurred to me to say, I won't do this because I'm 40. What occurred to me was, man, I'm 40 and I haven't done anything yet.
Yeah,
which is a different motivation.
Yeah. Well,
you know, and it worked, you know, and it still works. At this point, it makes me angry that I'm not doing more, which that's good in a way. It makes me feel akin to the Hernandez brothers, like Gilbert Hernandez when he was at the grand opening of the cartoon library said said something to the effect of you only have a limited time to do stuff, so you need to be doing stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Just another thing I can chalk up to him, like, influencing me on, you know?
So another character, Bus Stop Ned.
Bus Stop Ned, those are always one-page shorts, and Ned's dialogue, like, the entire scene may not be, or the other bystanders may not, but all of Ned's dialogue is stuff I've actually overheard on the bus.
Oh, okay, nice. All right. Boy Howdy?
And Boy Howdy, what in the Howdy family? That, yes. That was the kids' comic, and that's something I came up with Brian Kraft, the illustrator there.
Okay.
And kind of the notion there, and we were trying to keep that in the vein of what I do, like with the first issue, like he destroys his dad's record collection, you know. We wanted to keep that in the realm of, like, take a 10-year-old kid who's laughing at all the dorky stuff his hipster parents do.
Yeah, okay. All right. Panda Bear.
that goes back to the branding thing, actually. Marketing. I wanted a voice for all the awful ideas and all the awful things I think, but I wouldn't ever say.
So you're going to create somebody.
Right. So he's kind of my creature from the id. He is he's the stuff I don't want to admit, I think. He's the stuff that I think in my weak moments.
Is it therapeutic? Is it cathartic that you're like, ah?
Well, it makes me laugh. You know, you got to laugh at your own shit, you know. But, yeah, so it is therapeutic. I kind of miss that one. That's one where, talking about productivity, you know, I believe in paying my contributors and my artists.
And you know, I was going to mention that.
Don't have the money to pay Bob Starker, you know, anything to do a weekly, bi-weekly, monthly strip. So it's kind of gone on hiatus in that sense.
I got you. In fact, that was something I was going to mention, that I marveled at, and I admire that you are very open about the particular cost, profit, margin, I guess. Is that the best way to say it?
Yeah. You know, profit's a funny word.
It is. You know, and look, I mean, I can relate it to independent pro wrestling. There's a lot of promoters that will promise you the world, and that envelope is never as big as they promise, you know, and that's just the nature of the business. So I think that that's one of the reasons why I really admire that you're open about it. You're like, this is what we did. Here's the figures for it. You know, take it or leave it, but this is what it is, you know.
Well, you know, and that kind of goes back to coming from an indie music background.
Right, yeah.
There was my friend Eric Davidson wrote a great book called We Never Learn, which was about the kind of garage rock independent record scene of the 90s mostly. And in a section about the band The Gories, one of the members, Dan, talks about how the record labels were all, you know, bogus. They didn't give you up-to-date information, except for one. He said Crypt Records always sent him some money.
Yeah.
But I was like, man, I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
You know, I was working to be that guy. So in that sense, like, that part of that book influenced what I was going to do, and then Tim Warren, the guy from Crypt Records, kind of, you know, idol or whatever. I kind of wanted to be like Tim. I've never met him, but he's a pretty cool dude.
Yeah, I think that, quite frankly, I think it's the right thing to do if we're talking about it. You know, that, you know, if you have a wrestler or a band or a comic book creator that's putting forth a lot of effort and time and whatnot for whatever that art is, they should be compensated for such. So,
well, and going back to the vision thing, if you're not paying people, you don't have the right to edit them.
That's
I think.
A good way to look at
it. I mean, you don't have the right to impose your vision on their vision, which and still some people don't quite get that when I'm working with artists or new artists. I think, you know, you ask for an edit and you get an email back about their vision I've never outright said it in a reply email in that sense, but you know, their vision is actually, in my publication, secondary to my vision.
You're right, no, but, and that goes back to what we talked about minutes ago, you know, getting that working relationship. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Well, the next title is, of course, Belligerent Kitties.
Oh, gosh.
So I want to know, what was the inspiration for this?
Well, this
well, first of all, what is it? Let's talk about what it is for those folks at home who may not know.
It's just pictures of cute cats saying really obnoxious stuff to the reader, which, you know, this is what happens when I don't have Pander Bear, because it's the same idea where you get these dark, horrible thoughts and you blame everybody and what they do for the fact that you only sold 100 comics last year or whatever. And so you're like, well, screw it. I'm just going to sell out. And the two things that are popular are pictures of cats and saying just belligerent stuff to people online.
So would you say that probably Grumpy Cat was a little bit of an inspiration?
Not consciously.
Not consciously. Okay. Anyway, so,
you know, I do a pretty good job of filtering out what I get online. I don't get a lot of Grumpy Cat. Not a lot of people. Not a lot of that sneaks by. Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't tell you the genesis. So maybe subconsciously, Grumpy Cat was in there. But
yeah, it's a way like Pander Bear.
It was one day. I'm sure I just had enough kitten videos, and I'm like, you know, this kitten doesn't like you. this kitten wants to poop in your shoe. He doesn't.
So the book, though, is set to come out this Saturday. You're having a big release party.
It's going to be fun. I'm trying to take this horrible thing I'm doing. The other thing is, I'm really scared that people will like it and it'll actually catch on someplace. Kind of, you know, you ever hear the Beastie Boys talk about how they wouldn't have put "Fight for Your Right to Party" on the record if they had known?
I wouldn't want
Belligerent Kitties to be my thing like that.
Well,
because it's vile. It's just 28 pages of bad cat memes, but
yeah.
Anyway, this Saturday,
Cafe Kerouac, which is down on, I wrote down,
it's
the
on North High Street.
Yeah, 2250 North High Street. That's Northwood. Is that Northwood?
About
High,
yeah,
right about there.
Yeah.
For those folks that are around town, that are listening at home, that are in the Central Ohio area, you can roll on down there to North High Street. 7 p.m., correct?
7 p.m., and there'll be, in addition to a chance to buy, there are a couple things going on kind of ancillary to just buying the book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have a couple of contests going with cash prizes. Not a lot of cash, but, you know, just kind of fun stuff. Like, I'll have a sheet full of famous cartoon cats, and if you can name them all, you'll potentially win.
Okay.
And,
well, we'll there's going to be plenty of cat videos, apparently.
Plenty of cat videos, curated by a film expert, no less, Melissa Starker.
Okay.
So that'll be pretty wild. And then as just kind of a completely side thing, not counting the Belligerent Kitty book, since I'll have, you know, like 500 of them sitting there, all the stuff, Cafe Kerouac normally sells indie comics, including my comics.
Okay.
And they have a backstop stock of Nick's Comics stuff. So if the back stock of Nick's Comics at Cafe Kerouac sells out by the end of the show, I'm going to donate $50 to Cats Colony, which is a Dublin-based cat charity. They do a lot of spaying and education, and they're a really great organization.
Cool, that's really cool.
And
really, really cool.
An anonymous benefactor has agreed to match that if it happens. So it'll be
$100
to the charity.
That's great.
So, and they don't have to come to the event if they can make it to Kerouac between now and then.
Okay.
You know, they can go buy it. Just buy them up. I think I got about 20 books sitting around there in the stands. All the stuff we mentioned, plus the Westerns. I don't think we talked about the Westerns.
Well, no, I have that on my list here. You know, we got Nick's Westerns.
Yeah.
The next one's due out in April, correct?
Yep.
So let's go ahead and talk about a little of those. What was the inspiration behind those? Were you a fan of Westerns, either movies or...
Movies, mostly.
Yeah? Okay.
Western comics, too. But,
okay.
You know,
yeah.
I was a big... One of the things I used to grab off that 7-Eleven rack was Jonah Hex whenever they had it. Although that was kind of hard to find.
That was. Because he's been one of those ones where they bring back and then...
I'm an old... crabby man who doesn't like change. I hate all the newer Jonah Hex stuff. And by newer, I mean anything... post the end of the series, the Hex series, where, you know.
You know, I'll tell you what, speaking of that, I have a couple of the
But I
the
haven't
trades.
Read them, so, yeah.
I was going to say, I have a couple of the trades that were done by Justin Gray and Jimmy Pomigliotti, which I think was circa around 2005-ish. Mm-hmm. They were okay. I like Pomigliotti, I do, but they were okay. They weren't great, but they weren't awful either. Yeah. They were just there. Now the movie... Yeah.
The movie was a train wreck, but you know
the movie.
Anyway,
never mind.
So more movies. Those were more inspired by the by my love of Western movies.
What's your favorite Western movie? If I can throw you on the spot there, real quick,
Magnificent Seven.
Okay.
Without a doubt, Magnificent Seven. So yeah, I had an answer.
There you go.
That's not tough. I mean, I love a lot of them, and I like, you know, a lot of the
spaghetti westerns.
I like the spaghetti westerns, and I like some of, you know, I like singing cowboy serials with Gene Autry.
Oh man!
And I like you know.
I'll share my favorite.
I'm not a big John Wayne guy.
Okay.
But I, you know, I'll sit and watch it if that's what's on Sunday afternoon. But
I enjoy my favorite western, Two Mules for Sister Sarah.
That's a good one.
There's just the play of the two main characters I just enjoy more so than any of the action or anything along those lines. I just, there's something about it.
I think my favorite Clint Eastwood one would have to be High Plains Drifter. I mean,
it's a great, yeah.
I love the Sergio Leone stuff, but there's something, you know, I think High Plains Drifter at just the right age to be really freaked out by it. You know, and then like... And then, like, to, you know, a few months later, see Pale Rider, which, like, yeah, this is just like High Plains Drifter, but weak.
You know, that's totally a side note. The movie that freaked me out as a kid was RoboCop.
Really?
Yeah, because the opening scene where the first robot goes berserk and shoots that guy in the White Office and the blood and everything just...
Well, you might have been a preteen when you saw that, right? Because I was just a teenager.
I was 8 when I saw it. And that scrambled my brains. Like, I didn't even finish the movie. I was like,
You know, the one that scrambled my brains when I was a kid was I saw The Exorcist late at night. Like, turned it on when my mom, like, had gone to bed and stayed up late. And that freaked me out.
Yeah.
And another thing that freaked me out, late night movies, is a TV station showing Night of the Living Dead, which I was mostly cool with, except there's that part where, like, the house is surrounding and they're, like, showing the ghouls eating the flesh.
Yes.
And there's, like, one of the ghouls picks up a hand and, like, starts picking the meat off the bone. I saw that, and then they switched the commercial right then, and it was a KFC commercial back when Finger Lickin' Good was there. And that just, it kind of, the absurdity has stuck with me throughout life. And maybe that's part of why some of my horror comics just aren't, like, my westerns are much more serious and dark than my horror comics are.
So which one's coming out in April? Is what number would this be?
Nick's Western 3.
3, okay.
3, and it's kind of an unusual, again, that has recurring characters. Like all of my comics, I try to set up so there's no, they're not serial per se, but they do have recurring characters. So so people can pick them up and just read a complete story and not have to
worry about
from whence they came. But there is a kind of a weird continuity to the Westerns, because in the first issue, both the main characters die at the end. It's actually the climactic battle is the first issue, and then I'm spending the subsequent issues telling each of their stories leading up to it. You know,
so it's like a prequel.
Well, more or less. Westerns. Yeah. The great thing about historical genres is they're essentially a time machine, right? Mm-hmm. There's no reason why you have to pick a time and then just move forward
in linear order,
right you can order, and so I'm not doing that at all. And in fact, it gets even a little more convoluted, because in the Westerns I'm a big fan of flashbacks, so it jumps around in time period, but then it also flashes further back, which, you know, is something I enjoy playing with, and probably, you know, have some crossover flashbacks in the future. But, you know, I want to do that without people having to know the stories from before.
One other thing that I wanted to talk about real quick here is Columbus Alive. You know, sketching the city. That was something that, dare I say, you were in charge of, I suppose.
Could
you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Sketching the city is... every week, the Columbus Alive, which is our, I don't know how many people
free
get
newspaper,
from,
our
entertainment news. Yeah. Used to call them all weeklies, but the Columbus Alive is actually owned by the Columbus Dispatch, so they're not alternative to anything. But they're a great weekly newspaper publication for entertainment, and I think my editor, Justin McIntosh, does a great job with it.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
So what I do is I select and edit cartoons by local cartoonists that appear in the Columbus Alive. So, which is kind of neat because I don't know any other. There are still a few weekly entertainment newspapers across the country.
Yeah,
I think most of them use some sort of syndicated strip, like the Free Press in town. They have a lot of great cartoons, but it's Zippy and Red Meat and you know. And that's fine. That's great stuff, and that needs to be in Columbus too. But I think that it was really brave of the Alive to start showing, you know,
yeah,
the local talent,
hometown stuff.
Especially given the fact that Columbus is really blossoming into a town of note as far as comic creators go,
mm-hmm.
and cartoonists and,
mm-hmm. well,
and resources.
Just hands down, creatively.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, yeah, but I keep my narrow focus. but in general, creatively. And historically, since I've lived here, I moved to Columbus in late 89. It's kind of been a sine wave of activity. You know, there are highs, and then it goes to lows, and then highs. And we're kind of at the biggest high that we've been at since. You know, when I first moved to Columbus, there was a lot of great independent music and local music. There was, you know, Skrull and the New Bomb Turks and Gaunt. And a lot of those folks moved out of town or stopped playing. And you know, things got really kind of dismal, like the bar scenes at the Vicar, where you know, and now it's back on the upswing, where you know you have, you know, the Girls and Lydia Lovelace and you know, you have institutions supporting the local scene, like Jim from the Mug and Brush does his Mug and Brush session with local girls and local girls. That sounds horrible. Local bands. I was thinking of the band
the band the girls
who are one of my favorite. You know, and it used to be like
we're
whatever
not
got
anything creepy goes on down there.
We're not.
We just misspoke.
But that's my phone. I apologize.
Sorry.
But you know, places like that kind of spending time and money and effort and getting the community going.
Well, let's talk about music, because obviously you know, you started with it, that you know you've been a big fan and you've been passionate about music. So let's talk a little bit about that. So how did that develop? Like, as a young kid, what clicked and go, oh yeah, I gotta hear this?
Well,
do you remember? Or is it
I don't remember. I mean, I know there was a changing point. Mm-hmm. I can talk about that.
Sure.
A little
okay.
Bit. Right. You know, because kind of growing up, I grew up on Long Island, and there wasn't a lot of music like made readily available to me. You know, my brothers had some. You know, I would listen to my brothers Kiss and Alice Cooper records, and then they moved out, and those weren't so much around anymore. So I kind of would pick up like listening to classic rock radio and oldies stations. You couldn't find the you know, and this was the cassette generation, so you know I'd go to Sam Goody and buy cassettes, or the local grocery store and buy cassettes, and they didn't carry the oldies stuff, but they had like all the classic rock stuff, which, you know, if I made a list of all that stuff, you know, half of it I hate now and half of it I still love. But then, you know, when I got to college, a friend of mine bought a copy of Ramones Mania and just played it over and over again, and it completely brainwashed me. And then I decided that's what I think music should be, you know. And then there's where you can kind of see where the split happened, because then it's like, you know, you start looking at what you're listening to, and you're like, well, okay, Jimmy Buffett and Elton John, they're out. The Who, the Kinks, Tom Petty, they can stay.
Yeah.
You know.
So who else did you like? So you liked, you said the Ramones, the Who, Tom Petty, and that. Who else was, you know, somebody that you were like, yes, this is it?
I think the first like eye-opener to me that there was a lot of stuff out there that I should just start exploring was there was, a friend of mine got a... This wasn't a record. This was a homemade cassette of a compilation called... what's it called? It was a punk rock compilation. And it's turned into a famous one, but the name's poofing out of my brain.
Yeah, it's all right.
And we just played that over and over again. And it had... 999 and the Sex Pistols and you know, Adam Ant before Goody Two Shoes.
Yes.
And just endless, you know, different bands to get in, the Vibrators, stuff to learn. So
what do you like now? Like what besides those particular bands, is there anything new coming up that you're like, yes, this is it?
Like I said, I like the locally, I think that kind of country rock thing that's going on. There's some good stuff going on with that and power pop kind of stuff. Band X-Hex, have you heard of them?
They're yes. Yeah, I like
X-Hex. You know, I get a lot of crap for it. I thought Happy was a really good song.
Wait, the Kanye West song?
Pharrell Williams.
No, Pharrell Williams, whatever, yeah. Whatever.
No, that was a good pop song. And again, going back to the filters, I probably didn't have as much exposure to it as a lot of the people who's, you know...
Yeah.
Complaints where they heard it everywhere. I didn't hear it everywhere. All I heard was kind of a Motown backbeat and a fun little pop song. So, you know, I get crap for that, but I thought that was a good song. As opposed to, say, like, I did hear Move Like Jagger everywhere, and that song just drives me up a wall.
Yeah, it does. Well, do you have a guilty pleasure? Like something that you don't want to admit to and go, oh, I like this in music.
I'm not guilty of any of it.
Okay.
I'm not guilty about any of it. I mean, you like what you like.
Yeah,
you know, that doesn't mean you have to... I've never heard another Pharrell Williams song. I don't know if I like anything else he does. So,
yeah.
Are you gonna edit that out, man?
No. There's no editing. I'm just making sure. Just making sure we're still good here. That's all.
Yeah, yeah. No, you know, you like what you like. I don't.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm the same with comics. I don't have a guilty pleasure necessarily. Maybe when you start talking about TV, you can start talking about stuff where like. But then again, I fess up to it all. So how guilty can I be? But
are you reading any comics right now? Just changing it real quick on you since you mentioned that real quick. Is there anything you're reading like right now or maybe in the last year or a couple of years? Because I imagine, you know...
It's tough because so much of my money goes into making comics. Yeah. I don't have a lot of time to read comics. And I, in fact, have a pile of reading that's about that
high. Join the club, my friend. Join the club.
And some of the stuff I like is just kind of pricey. I just bought the... And this is old. It's not new, but... The Basil Wolverton biography book from Fantagraphics, The Creeping Death from Neptune, which kind of covers his early
career. I'm a little bit unfamiliar with that particular book.
Basil Wolverton was?
I've heard of the name, yeah.
He was a cartoonist and then later comic artist, pretty much self-taught from the Pacific Northwest, and his thing was, he was kind of... I want to say that his art was psychedelic before psychedelic really became a thing.
Okay.
And a lot of crazy creatures, a lot of train of thought kind of plots in what he did. But a lot of his early stuff, which this book covers, was stuff inspired by Alex Raymond's Flash Gordon being so popular and Wolverton loving Alex Raymond. So he kind of was doing his own space sci-fi adventures, but they were, you know,
kind of out there. Yeah.
And they never got accepted. He wanted to be a news paper cartoonist, and they never got accepted to that. So he ended up going to comics as a secondary thing.
That's cool.
Yeah. So that's pretty neat. I like Tim Lane, who comics kind of does these kind of surreal noir comics. Happy Hour in America, Abandoned Cars, and he just came out with one that has kind of a noir. It's not The Big Nowhere, but the Big Go or something like that. And I haven't bought it yet, which is why I don't. I'm horrible with titles, too. Like, in flight. I can't hang with the comic nerds because they, like, start talking about specific issue numbers, and I have no idea.
Yeah, no. It gets confusing, especially, you know what? Here's the thing is, especially with DC reloads and renumbers things every 3 years, it's harder to know and remember when such an event happened, you know. I think, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
and that goes for you know, Marvel does it too. I mean, they all do it to an extent, you know.
It's that's not true. I picked up. I love Mike Allred, so I picked up a couple issues to Silver Surfer. So it's not like I'm completely in.
Sure. Yeah.
But I couldn't tell you the last time I actively bought a. You know, pursued a Marvel or a DC title.
Yeah.
Years ago.
I got you.
Years ago. It may have been the Legion of Superheroes reboot, the 5 years later reboot.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's like 89, right?
Yeah, that's
20. That's 25 years ago.
Way back there. Way back there.
But
yeah.
That may be the last time, like, I went out of my way to, like, And then they wrecked that, so...
Like I said, I think that there's a lot of great ideas at the independent level, you know, that obviously, you know, some of them will see the light of day, some of them won't.
Can I turn the table here?
Sure.
What do you call independent? I've just had this conversation with people. How do you define independent?
That's a great question. I would say independent is...
Is Image independent?
Is it what?
Is Image independent in your mind?
No, I don't believe so. I don't believe Dark Horse is independent. I don't believe IDW is independent. I look at it this way. I look at it as based on, in the terms of comics, I'm looking at circulation and then looking at the amount of capital that a company has in order before they're deemed independent. I don't know if that...
So if you're sucking dirt like me, you're independent.
You make it sound so unattractive, Ken.
I tell you what, I do think it's unattractive to be independent. Like, I defined it as me personally. If I was going to call something independent, it would be if they're distributed by Diamond, they're not independent because that's.
Sure. Okay.
That's fair. The syndicate right now.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
That's the that's who provides. Comic stores, you know, in general, again, painting with that broad brush,
yeah.
what they own. So you know, I would be independent. I would hesitate to, you know.
I'm gonna be honest. You got me on that one. That's a really good question.
I think it's something people should think about.
I do too, and you know, because you could put that on any particular genre of anything, you know. And as you're explaining here, I'm trying to think, man. You know, I've worked a lot of independent wrestling. What does that mean? Because
independent of what?
Of what? Yeah, you're right. You're right. And I think that that's something that or independent film. I'm a huge fan of independent film, and you know, you think and you say, I saw this movie. But as it was put out by Sony Pictures or, you know, Fox Searchlight, so is it really independent? And that's a very good question, man.
You know, how many lists have you seen online of, and this is like a resource for people who are publishing, you know, you see lists online of indie-friendly stores. And how are those stores defining it? My guess, you know, most of those lists are, hey, are you an indie-friendly store? Give me your name and I'll put you up on the website. And they're probably defining it as... not Marvel or DC.
Probably.
It's like, I have Image, I support indie. Which, you know, it's fine supporting Image. I'm not saying...
By no means is this an indictment on the way the comic book industry works.
But, you know, in my mind, indie-friendly is something more like The Laughing Ogre, where if you go in with an indie comic, they'll pay you cash money for it and put it on the shelf.
Yeah.
You know, and there aren't a lot of those.
Yeah. All right, well, as we start to get up to about 54 minutes here, let's start wrapping things up here, Ken. Let's talk one more time for those folks. You know, I got people listening all around, but for those folks that are in Central Ohio, this Saturday, 7 p.m., Cafe Kerouac, which is 2250 North High Street. It's the big release party for Belligerent Kitties.
It is.
All right, everybody should come out. I heard there's cake, kitty litter cake. Do you know what's in the kitty litter cake?
Kitty litter cake may have been nixed by a New Year's resolution. I've been You know, it was a weird year last year. and I've put on some pounds. And
there may not be any cake.
No. There may not be any cake.
Hey, don't let that disturb you, though.
Yeah, you should come anyway, they sell baked goods at Kerouac.
See, okay, there you go.
So if you got the yen for it. They also sell beer, so if you want to come and get drunk and watch your cat videos, you can do that there. Not endorsing the behavior necessarily, just saying you can.
But watch out, Ken might write you into another story, you know, as being one of those weird, creepy vicar-like guys at the.
I might. But, you know, it should be a good night. There are, like I said, there's the charity aspect of it,
sure.
And there's the... there'll be some other entertaining kind of contests and stuff.
Gotcha. Okay, so let's talk about where people can check you out online and social media-wise. So I'll throw it to you. What should people look for?
All right. The main website is nixcomics.com, nixcomics.com.
I'm totally with you. I just scoffed because this is exactly what I was going to get you. If you didn't do it, I was going to go, wait, stop, spell that.
Yeah. you know, the funny thing is some people call me Nick because it's Nick's Comics with an N-I-X. But anyway, so you do. You have to spell it out. And that's where you can go buy stuff. And it has the latest news in the background in only the broadest sense. I do most of my work like that through social media. So there's a Nick's Comics Facebook page that you can look up.
Cool.
Twitter account. And I've started doing Tumblr. I've hired on a service to kind of help me with that, which I know the guy, so I don't normally recommend hiring on any sort of publicity at my level, but this is a friend who I trust. So I got a Nick's Comics Tumblr that you can look up as well.
Okay, and all that's available at the website, like all the information for the Twitter and that. So
should be.
nixcomics.com.
.com, yeah.
Got it. All right, Ken. Thanks, man, for coming on.
Thanks.
You know,
it was my pleasure. It was great.
Yeah, man, definitely. Maybe in a few months we'll have you back on and we'll talk about how well Belligerent Kitties sold.
I tell you what, I'll give you a call if I sell out.
All right, you got it.
And then you can give me a call if it doesn't.
All right, well, Ken, thanks a lot. For folks listening at home, we're going to throw it to a quick break and then I'll be back to wrap up this episode. As an avid listener of the PBD Cast, you know that I, John Orlando, am a huge comic book fan. And I'm here to tell you about a graphic novel that's coming out in 2015 that I know you're going to want to get your hands on. It's called Staunch Ambition, and it's a futuristic science fiction fantasy adventure that I know you're going to want to read. So just head over to staunchambition.com. That's right, staunchambition.com to read up about all the information about that graphic novel. Because I guarantee that when it comes out, you'll want to grab a copy. And it'll be unlike anything you've ever read before. Trust me. Check out staunchambition.com. You will not regret it. Hey, folks. There you have it. My conversation with Ken Epstein. He's a really good dude. I found his ideas, his insights, his philosophy to be very intriguing. And hopefully, you found it intriguing and entertaining as well. If you get a chance and you're in the Columbus area, as I hyped it, before you heard the conversation, and I hyped it during, you know, come on out this Saturday. That would be January 10th. Head on down to Cafe Kerouac, 7 p.m. for the big release party for Belligerent Kitties. Heck, man, pick up a copy if you can. But if you can't, definitely go over to Nix Comics, nixcomics.com, and maybe order yourself a copy, or two, or three, whatevs. You know, again, I find that most people have a kindred spirit when it comes to somebody that's doing something on their own terms, much like this podcast. So I want to support Ken and all the great people over at Nick's Comics because there's a whole host of people that make things happen, man, over there. So definitely, definitely support them if you get the chance. So with that, I think it's time, ladies and gentlemen, for a very special edition. I'm going to call it Orlando's Faves / Orlando Hates. There's the music right there. Oh yeah. Alright. So, for those that don't know, for those that maybe are a first-time listener, Orlando's Faves is where I come on and I end every particular episode of this podcast with something that I like. Alright? Something that I think is cool. Something that I personally enjoy. There have been a few particular editions of Orlando's Hates
where I come on here and bitch about something that I don't like. Well, unfortunately, this item today that I'm going to talk about has a little bit of both, some like and dislike to them. Now, for those that did not listen to the podcast episode a couple weeks ago, number 58 with Brian Lau, I will repeat one of the items that we talked about that I think one of my favorite, one of the greatest comic books ever is Watchmen. All right, I could go and spout off a bunch of other of my favorites, like, you know, X-Men, God Loves, Man Kills, Batman, The Long Halloween, Batman, Death in the Family, but I will not. I'll digress and just talk about Watchmen, because I do really believe it's one of the most iconic and epic comic books ever created. So, with that being said, over the holiday break, had a little opportunity to do a little bit of reading, and God knows I have a lot of comic books to read, but I pulled out the collections of DC Comics before Watchmen. So, this is my Orlando's Faves / Orlando Hates. So, DC, I think a year or maybe 2 years ago, I think maybe it was 2013, decided to get together a gigantic collection of great writers, creators, artists, etc., and do pretty much a prequel book for Watchmen. And they were basically broke up into 8 different storylines. Night Owl, Dr. Manhattan, Ozymandias, the Crimson Corsair, the Silk Spectre, the Minutemen, the Comedian, and Rorschach. And so there were various different issues per each particular character. Like, I think the Comedian was like 6 issues, Rorschach was 4. But I read the collections of them. Well, I should say I read 4 out of the 8 collections. So my take on it, being a diehard Watchmen fan, is that I will say that I liked the Comedian. I thought that was very well done. Brian Azzarello was the writer on that. J.G. Jones was the artist. It was very well done. I absolutely despised the Silk Spectre, and I hate to say that because Amanda Connor is a favorite of mine. I like her stuff, but man, it was just awful. The Minutemen was decent until the last 3 pages, and it was awful. It just turned my stomach. And Rorschach was okay, I will say. So those are the 4 that I read. So I like the Comedian. I'll say I like Rorschach. So those are the 2 Orlando's faves. Orlando Hates is the Minutemen and the Silk Spectre. And right now I'm currently in the middle of the Ozymandias storyline, which I will not state. Maybe in a subsequent episode I'll have another review of the other 4 books I have to read: Night Owl, Dr. Manhattan, Crimson Corsair, and Ozymandias, and maybe I'll give you my 2 cents worth on them. It's hard to beat the original. I think that, you know, that's been proven many, many times in many, many different genres. So, but there you go, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to check them out, do so. And if maybe you've read some of those and you're like, John, that's crap, well, then let me know. And how can you do that, you ask? Well, a couple different ways. First of all, you could shoot me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You could tweet me @pvdmvp. And you can also shoot me a message or shoot me a picture or whatever. I'm not really 100% sure how Instagram works. I'm just going to tell you that right now. I'm really learning on that one. Anywho, but I'm also available. Totally rambling there for a minute. But I am on Instagram also, @pvdmvp. I'm learning a little bit. I don't know. I'm using a little more than I thought I would, but nonetheless, there you go. So check me out, Twitter, Instagram, or shoot me an email. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate every single one of you sitting down and spending some time with me and listening to what I have to say and what my guests have to say. And from the bottom of my heart, thank you. And I will chat at each and every one of you later. Thanks for listening, folks.